In addition to market forces, there are key trends that are also occurring out there that change things. So with respect to technology, things that I see right now as I put together this presentation are things like autonomous vehicles, the drones out there, the internet. And so recently I had a package delivered to my house, and I struck up a conversation with the delivery guy, and I said, you know, your job is going to be changing here relatively soon. And he said, how so? And I said, you know, here it is. You drive this big brown truck around, you stop at everybody's driveway, you run up the driveway and deliver the packages, whatever the case may be. I said, in the future, I said, you're probably going to be relegated to the back of this truck. I said, your job will literally be not to drive that truck, because you'll be on an automated path that will be automated, you know, drive you to some parking lot somewhere. Your job will be filling drone, you know, grippers with various packages and programming them with various addresses. I said, you're going to come to some stop on the corner. You're going to retract the roof of your UPS truck, and out of this thing is like, you know, the Wizard of Oz, the monkeys flying out of the castle. These drones are going to be leaving, delivering all these packages, while you're sitting out there sorting the next set of packages as the drones return, and you're going to start programming them. Once all your drones return, to close the roof, and, you know, as you move to the next location, you're going to continue to work there. So these are technological things that actually can change a particular market. Regulatory issues are another one. One of the reasons I shared earlier about this whole oil and gas thing was because one of the things that I also saw, not only did I see this pain that people are going through having to explain various aspects that didn't differentiate their particular product and slowed their sales process down, but there was a regulatory change that was coming. And so, to kind of put a little bit of background on this, prior to the president signing the Jobs Bill, which was intended to provide crowdfunding to businesses to kind of get them up and running, one of the things that the Jobs Bill had to do was get away from what they called the general solicitation rule. So for years, the Securities and Exchange Commission said, if you have an oil and gas business and you're looking for investors, you must find people who are what we call accredited investors to invest in your particular program. Because if they're accredited, we figure they're savvy financially enough that you're not going to go ahead and bilk them out of their money. So we're going to limit the number of people that you can sell to that are not accredited investors to go out there. But if I was going to sell an interest in my particular company through a Jobs Bill, I needed to be able to solicit people, and in the old days I couldn't solicit them because I had to have a relationship with them prior. And so when that came out, all of a sudden, ding, 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 light started going off. I said, hey, within the oil and gas business, it's a very tight group. The only people who are investing in new oil and gas programs is, in fact, people that are insiders, people who already have a high net worth, and more importantly, are already in that particular industry. I said, now, with the regulatory change, these oil and gas companies will literally be able to say, hey, guess what? I get this oil well I want to drill. Would you like to be party to that? Look, the rich people make lots of money on oil and gas. Why wouldn't you? So there was this huge educational bubble that was going to happen because only a very small subset of the world even understood what it was like to drill a hole for oil and gas. Now there's going to be this whole new market. I said, you know what? Double jeopardy for me. I'm thinking I'm going to double down on this. It's even more important. So here, sometimes a regulatory change can literally change, you know, the complexion of your particular business and the future kind of going forward. So import, export fees. So we just had a new presidential election. How is that going to affect that? Are we going to be more insulative? Are we going to be more open? You know, there's been issues about like the NAFTA trade agreement and the Pacific PAC agreement, those types of things. And as those things were in place, those things changed. If you were an import exporter, those had some rather significant implications to you. Taxes are another one. If I increase taxes or decrease taxes, that implies more investing or less investing in a particular business and may change how I look at things. So I began to buy real estate when taxes became a big problem for me because it came with a tax consequence or a tax avoidance technique to go off and do that. I invested in oil and gas as a result of a tax rules. The higher the taxes are, the more it creates a sucking sound into going investing in certain types of things, you know, that are more tax advantaged. So these are trends. Again, you can't control any of these. These are external things. They're going there. Social or cultural things. Wealth distribution. Again, part of that whole deal with the jobs bill was effectively there to try to close that gap between the rich and the poor. Because if you sat there and people would look at it and say, why are the rich continue to make money versus the poor not so much? Well, the rich were getting invested in companies that were going public or investing in businesses that, you know, startup businesses because they were accredited investors that allowed them to get dividend income, where somebody who was living paycheck to paycheck wasn't able to do that. Simpler things, I can even go back to housing and how housing, the home mortgage deduction piece actually, you know, was again a government regulatory piece to get people to actually buy into buying homes as opposed to renting them, because that's how they kind of figured they would make money and again work on that wealth distribution thing. So you can see how external factors might affect that. Discretionary income that people have is also a key factor that fits in there. And of course, we had talked about some of the demand curves again with where people are age-wise and as that goes through those different baby boom generations. And I would add that this is not only global, but it's also local. One would argue that the median age of somebody who lives in Boca Raton is not the same age as somebody in Silicon Valley, right? I mean, you much more younger population in Silicon Valley, much more retired people, let's say, in Boca Raton. So they're regional as well as national kind of trends that you have to deal with. Socioeconomic, again, I have kids that are kind of in that marrying stage. When I was a kid, I mean, if you were 20 years old and you weren't married, that was a, ooh, wow, what's wrong with you? But now, if you take a look at the average age, I mean, boys don't get married till 29 years old, and women not till 27. I mean, so it's a bit of a shift there. So how does that affect? If I'm a wedding planner, for crying out loud, that has some rather significant elements to how I'm going to go ahead and look at that, some key trends that go in there. Living arrangements is another one. When I was a kid, for example, it was very common for elderly people to live with their kids, quite frankly. I tried that. It didn't work so well for me. You know, my mom lives in an independent living facility right now because I couldn't put two hens in the same house, if you know what I'm saying. So, you know, race density also changes things. So sometimes we have changes in our ecosystems that go ahead and affect us. So again, key trends, things I can't necessarily control.